You might have been looking for Dr. Luis Galvao today for this presentation. He is not here, but he is being represented by, actually, my dear friend and colleague, Marilyn Rice. She is a highly experienced senior advisor in health promotion and coordinator of the Urban Health and Determinants of Health team for the area of sustainable development and environmental health at the Pan American Health Organization. So her presentation is on rapid urbanization and the challenge of social justice, the case of Latin America. She's also being joined by Kira Fortune.
Good afternoon, everybody, and I am Kira Fortune. I'm neither Galvao nor Marilyn Rice, but we work in a very equitable manner, so I am here to give you a brief overview of what is happening in our region. We work in the Pan American Health Organization, which is the regional office for the World Health Organization. On a daily basis, we are based in Washington, D.C., where we work in the area of sustainable development and environmental health, addressing issues like social determinants of health, urban health, violence, tobacco use, and alcohol. And I work with my dear colleague, Marilyn, who really is very renowned in this field. And she will address what is happening within our region and what member states are currently doing in terms of urban health. And I'm just going to give you a quick snapshot of what urban health currently looks like in the Americas. So I've got a few speaking notes here. So inequity and gender and inequality and poverty continue to be a challenge in the region of the Americas. And despite the fact that the Americas is actually a middle-income region, it continues to be the most inequitable region globally. So when it comes to income level, we actually see a significant amount of exclusion of the poor. We are seeing a rapid increase of urbanization in the region. And whilst urban health has been regarded as a positive social determinant historically, we are also now seeing that the rapid increase that we are seeing in the region have significant implications for the populations. It's worth noting that the World Bank conducted a study that showed that approximately 25% of the population in Latin America currently live on less than $2 a day. We should also note that in 2008, for the first time in history, the UN reported that more than half the human population is living in urban areas, and with this proportion expected to rise to more than 70% by 2050. The region of the Americas is the most urbanized region in the developing world, with 77% of its population already living in the cities. I think just to give you a concrete example, what we really want to do with this presentation is to show you concretely what is happening in the region, but just to give you a very concrete example of urban inequity in our region. If we look at the example of Sao Paulo in Brazil, we can see that the wealthiest sections of the city have 176 times more green space than poorer sections, and the poorer neighborhoods also have 1,000 times fewer libraries and report that teenage pregnancy and mortality rates are between 9 and 14 times greater than wealthier ones. Such inequalities are currently being noted. It's being put on the global agenda, and there are movements in place that are addressing these inequities, and I'm now going to pass you over to my colleague Marilyn Rice, who will let you know what is happening amongst our member states.
Thank you. I just wanted to briefly share with you some events that have happened very recently in terms of moving this agenda forward. The Pan American Health Organization is governed by the ministries of health of all the member countries in this region of the world, and we have a meeting with all those ministers of health every year in September. It's called our Directing Council. And during the Directing Council this year, we have what we call a roundtable discussion where all the ministers and their delegations came together to talk about the issues of urban health. I think the most significant conclusion that came out of that, I want to share with you what came out of it, but the most significant one is that we got a mandate to develop a strategy, an action plan, and a resolution that will be presented to the 51st Directing Council meeting next September, and it will give us as an organization and all of our member countries, including the U.S., a mandate to move ahead in terms of addressing issues related to urban health. In terms of recommendations for us as an organization, the Pan American Health Organization, one of the things we were requested to do was to develop evidence. Develop evidence in some very innovative ways. So we're looking at how we can create observatories in countries to measure changes in urban health and ways to address them. We're looking at ways of documenting and coming up with surveillance systems that address the social determinants of health. We're looking for tools that really can evaluate the impact of change in terms of health related to urbanism, and we're also coming up with documentation instruments that will be very effective ways of documenting the context as well as what happens, kind of looking at why it's happening and how it's happening, and not just the result of what's happening. Another critical area was that of raising awareness, where we really need to look at how we raise the awareness not only of decision makers, but people working and living at the community level in terms of issues of equity, and how to address those issues, and how we can really document the processes that create or avoid what happens in terms of inequity. A third issue was that of having resources available, not just human and financial resources, but looking at ways we can partner across sectors, across institutions, to combine resources to be the most effective. And that directly relates to partnerships that we need to develop on different levels with different kinds of agencies, seeing urban health as an issue that needs to be addressed from many different aspects. Adaptation and development of capacities needs to be developed in many creative ways. We're looking at how we can partner across countries, across cities, to really share experiences, document those experiences, and find out what is happening innovatively across the region. As I mentioned, we've been charged with developing a plan of action. That plan of action will be directed to us as an organization, as well as to our member countries, and they will be very specific activities that we think can be developed. For us as a regional body, it will entail things like creating guidelines, creating policies, trying to orient countries and cities and what they can do. And we found that a very effective way of addressing this is to go through the local leaders, the mayors, the local councils, and to not necessarily talk about health but quality of life, and what can be done in terms of the capacity to convene the different stakeholders at the local level through other than just the health sector. And finally, of course, strengthening health services. I think we all know that certainly health services are very key, but other kinds of urban services are also critical, that of transportation, that of food, that of housing, that of public spaces for recreation and parks. There's just a whole lot of other kinds of services that are important to have available at the urban center in order to have a population that's healthy. Oh, and there's one more. Okay. We also had recommendations that came out of the discussions focused on local governments and on national governments. One that was common to both was the whole idea of mainstreaming health equity. How do we get both locally and nationally different levels of government to focus on how to address equity issues? For local governments, how to improve citizen participation and make that participation more active, not only in assessing what the issues are, but how to come up with the solutions and how to sustain those solutions. Urban health equity assessments, there are tools to address this. We want to be able to help local governments put them into place. To have health services that are more flexible so that no matter where people are, they can access those services either where they live, where they work, if they're migrating to different areas within the country, that those services can be flexible enough to address those populations. And clearly, regular data collection and analysis so that we know how we're doing, we know what's successful, what's not successful, and what other interventions are needed. For national governments also, I've been hearing a lot about this during the course of the day, how we need to work across sectors. Health sector is very important, but the health sector alone isn't going to solve the problems. And when we're looking at equity, we really need to be looking at how to get to people where they live, where they work, where they play, where they study, and who are the most effective sectors to do that, not necessarily the health sector. That said, the health sector still has a responsibility to be the catalyst and to try to promote those changes. to have the data that'll help us look at that and make that data accessible. Accessible in the sense that it's disaggregated down to a level where we can really identify the inequities, accessible in the sense that the information is expressed in a way that many different people are going to understand it. We want to be able to facilitate on a national level the interchange of best practices and lessons learned within countries and across countries, and finally establish financing mechanisms that aren't going to just come from the health sector. Lastly, I want to talk about two regional forums that we held last week in New York City, one on urban health and one on health promotion. We had 70 participants from 14 different countries that came. You can see here the list of the different topics they addressed. And I just want to briefly tell you some of the recommendations that they gave to us that will be included in this action plan that we're developing. And they dovetail a lot with what came out of our roundtable discussions with the ministers of health. They talked about investing in capacity building and workforce training, and that workforce training not just health sector, but any other sector as well. To recognize best practices through contests. We had a contest this year for World Health Day looking at best practices in urbanism and health, and we were able to identify a lot of really wonderful experiences across the region. To invest in the development of networks and reinforce the ones that are existing in terms of health promotion and urban health. We have a wonderful network in the Americas of health promoting schools, of healthy municipalities, cities, and communities. So we have a lot of networks already in place, so we need to reinforce those. Generating the evidence, and I talked a bit about that. There was a lot of what was said by the roundtable that was also repeated by our experts that came together for the forums. But especially looking at governance and how we can reinforce participatory, transparent decision-making at the local level that responds to what the real needs are. Promoting policy coherence in urban settings, looking at how we prioritize both urban health and health promotion and think upstream about preventing many of the conditions that create some of the problems that we're facing in urban settings and how we can fund them. Promoting leadership in both health promotion and urban health, ensuring that structures and conditions of effective community participation are in place, and finally promoting intersectoral approaches to addressing urban health and health promotion in urban settings. So finally, I hope most of you are familiar with the WHO Commission on the Social Determinants of Health. Kira referred to basically what the commission talked about in terms of justice and injustice, and basically what we're working towards is having a world where social justice is taken seriously. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we do have time for a couple of questions from Marilyn Rice and Kira Fortune. I have a question. Can you share one or two of the best practices? You know, just something that gives us a little bit of meat on the great work that you're doing.
Okay, thank you. One of the things that I think we learned early on is that we have to recognize that even though the health sector may be a catalyst, that we're only a partner among many, and so we have to think about how to frame what we're doing in terms of what others are going to see their role and their competitive advantage in participating. So we talk about a lot about promoting quality of life, improving well-being. We try to many times avoid the word health because for many the word health means medical care. And we try to, as I said, build on networks. So where do people live? Where people live, I think if you think about your daily lives, you're part of networks, all different kinds of networks. We have this network, which is a professional network. But you know, if you are somehow involved in a school, there's a network of people involved in the school or your workplace or whatever. So one of the things is to try to find out what's out there in terms of network and bringing people together and work with and through those people. There are a lot of informal leaders that aren't necessarily identified as the leaders in a community, the elected mayor necessarily. And bringing in those informal leaders is really important because what we find by working with mayors and local administrations is that when governments change, if we're depending on the officially elected leaders, then things change. Whereas if we're working from the ground up, finding community leaders that aren't necessarily the formal leaders, finding what other sectors can be brought in, bringing in the private sector, which may have a whole different agenda, but finding what we have in common and why it's of interest to have the private sector. Bringing in as many different partners as we can, we find that when political changes take place, we can also sustain the initiatives. I think sharing across countries is really critical. We have initiatives like Sister Cities, where cities across the region and across the world identify commonalities and they share with each other what they're doing. And I think in today's electronic age, there's a lot of opportunity to use electronics to really share experiences. We've come up with a guide for helping folks document their experiences, not just looking at what they're doing, but how they're doing it. It's going up on our website, and the idea is that this will be a way for people to share experiences across the region and across the world in terms of not only what they've done, but how they've done it, why it's been successful, and how it might be replicated elsewhere. So I think there's a lot of, I could go on and on, but I don't know, I see a hand, is there?
Yeah.
For a couple of questions.
I had a question about, you said, talk about collecting evidence. Do you get into detail about collecting evidence about quality of water and air and sanitation and sewer, you know, systems, all that sort of nitty-gritty detail about?
Yeah, the documents we prepared for our forum in New York had a lot of this very detailed information. I think for every sector that you mentioned, whether it's air quality, water quality, transportation, whatever, there are criteria and standards. Different countries have different standards, but there are definitely measurable standards where one can measure the current status and then whether you're making progress or not. And there are a number of countries, for example, with air pollution, where they're really trying to control not only the use of private vehicles and when they're used, but putting in wonderful public transportation systems so that they're really trying to see how they can address this. Water and sanitation is a critical issue. It's directly related to housing and how housing is developed. And one of the things that some of the cities are trying to do is to anticipate the migration that they're going to have because they know they're only going to get increased populations. And rather than just letting them settle into areas that haven't been developed, they're trying to think upstream and begin to plan for those communities to come in so they have the infrastructure necessary. And people aren't building precarious housing on hills that are going to wash away and, you know, flooding and things like that. So, yes, I think for each of the areas that we're working in, there are very specific criteria. They're not necessarily global or regional criteria. Very often, countries come up with their own, but there are very measurable standards by which we can see changes.
I think we'll hold the other questions. Thank you very much.